free my mind, open my heart with the whispers of truth, to live a conscious life, to live a conscious life on the growing edge.
And now, here's Ali.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Dr. Ali Benjamin, and it is my great pleasure to be here today. And if you're here for the first time, I'm so glad that you're here. Welcome. Here at Growing Edge Live, we're all about having conversations with soul-centered individuals that are channeling their time, their talent, their energy, their resources, their love into doing good works in the world and bringing us together as humanity in love. So welcome. I'm so happy to be here today because I have an amazing guest today, and you're going to meet her in just a little bit, Sarah Stevens Nichols. But before we jump into our conversation, I have a question from John for Ask Ali. And so John says, I've been working on myself, seeing a therapist, and practicing meditation for several months now. Good for you, John. It's been hard work, but I'm loving it. Things are going well in most areas of my life, except with my relationships. My friends don't understand the new me. Maybe I am outgrowing them. I want to connect with people that are aligned with the new me. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Well, thank you, John, and congratulations on diving in to doing a little bit of self-discovery. I know that it can really unearth a lot of things, and it's good to hear that you're working with someone to be able to talk those things through. And meditation, practicing meditation is a wonderful, wonderful soul-centering practice that really is the key or the place where we get so much enrichment. We get to really explore who we really are. We get to calm down our nervous systems, find more peace, and reduce stress. Meditation is such a powerful tool and a practice for self-realization. And so good for you. So I have some thoughts. You say that you're sort of outgrowing some of your old friendships, or maybe they don't understand you. Or don't connect with you. And I know that the longer you do it, the more those friends that are willing to grow with you will learn to understand and connect with you on this whole new level. I know there's five things that came up when I read your question for me as to how to really deepen, to expand consciousness so that you will attract or align or connect with new people. Because really, as we're on the path to self-discovery, as we're beginning to develop ourselves and gain self-mastery, life mastery, we gain consciousness. Our consciousness expands. And in metaphysics, we talk about consciousness attracting. And we can't... getting to the question here, because I could really go off on a tangent, but I won't. The main thing is to be you, because being you to the fullest is really the best way to try that new you on and to attract others that resonate or vibrate or meet you at that frequency of consciousness, that frequency of energy, and even the things you do, like meditation. People will be attracted to the kinds of things that you do. So self-realization is really the first step, knowing yourself, doing the healing work, doing the forgiveness work that seems to bubble up as we start to really explore ourselves and get to know ourselves and to learn how to get along with our family members And many of you know that watch the show, I've been studying the Enneagram really quite deeply for the last 9 months. And knowing yourself is really key to building compassion for others, because we're all so different, but we're not that different at the level of the soul. So understanding your personality structure, how things got to be the way they are in your life, and discovering your blind spots and revealing your gifts and talents in ways that really can move you forward on your journey, on your soul purpose journey. Another thing I think in building consciousness and attracting the things and the people that we want is to really be present. We've all heard of the power of now and all the teachings around being present in our lives and being fully present with the individuals and with the task at hand when we're giving our full attention to who and what's in front of us. Then we are really showing up as our true self that is engaged and curious and open and receptive. And also, we're a clear mirror. And then the next one is kindness, loving kindness. It's such a beautiful practice to just channel that loving, kind energy into any situation that you find yourself, into the relationships you're in. There's always a kind act, a kind gesture, a kind, loving, caring presence that we can occupy that, again, it builds this consciousness. And people are attracted at that level because developing new friends, connections, we want to express our true self, the true self that we're becoming. And loving kindness, that's what we are if we really give expression to our soul. Our soul wants to connect and our soul is kind and attentive. The next one is to be generous of spirit, to give abundantly of your time, your talents, your treasures in areas that within people and in organizations and with hobbies and things that you do, to just be open and generous and giving, and also giving praise and gratitude where it's due. This builds up this energy of joy and aliveness and creativity that is so key to making connections and deepening friendships, to be able to share yourself so fully and so generously is really key. And the last one is creative expression, bringing your unique gifts, whatever they are. And if you're on this path, you're probably realizing there's things that maybe you've put on the back burner, things that you love to do. Well, maybe it's time to circle back and connect with those things that bring you the most joy. Because when we're vibrating at a level of joy and peace and harmony and serenity, when we're vibrating at that level, we tend to attract that into our lives. It's as though we develop the eyes to be able to see in new ways. And that gives people the opportunity for them to see us in our very most authentic expression when we're doing what we love, when we're paying attention, when we're giving praise and gratitude where it's due, when we've done our self-work, when we truly know who we are in truth, what we are in truth, and how we're here to serve in truth, then you'll naturally attract those individuals that will appreciate and help support you on your growth journey. So I hope this has helped. It's all about you. It's all about developing the you that you're here to be. And you know how to do this because you came equipped with everything. It's right inside you. And you've got this meditation practice that's going to help you turn inside, go within, and unlock those treasures. And so peace and blessings to you, John. And if any of you have a question and you'd like to explore it here, go ahead and email me at growingedgelive@gmail.com. Thank you. All right. So now we're going to dive into my beautiful conversation with my beautiful new friend, Sarah Stevens-Nichols. Now, Sarah is a speaker, a leader, an author. She has a blog that's pronounced Snickles Blog. I love that. That's Sarah Nichols Blog, Snickles Blog. And she's been doing this since 2004. Her experience as a public interest lawyer in Washington, D.C., and around the California legislature, and a minister at the Center for Spiritual Awareness in West Sacramento, informs her work as a co-creator of a completely new reality. Can't wait to talk about that. She has experienced and facilitated healing from knee, shoulder, and wrist pain, compulsive eating, codependence, vagueness with money, fear of intimacy, and workaholism. Progress in all those areas requires connecting with her inner knowing, about which she is writing a book, How to Know What You Know. I love the title of the book, and I love to hear more about it. Sarah Stevens-Nichols, welcome to Growing Edge Live.
Thank you so much, Allie. Great to be here. So excited.
Yeah. So you're in Sacramento?
Yeah, Sacramento, California, the state capital.
Yeah, beautiful. And I'm here in Utah. And so how did you get to, have you always lived in California?
I grew up in San Diego, but then I went to law school in Buffalo, New York, and college in Portland, Oregon, and then lived in Washington, D.C., and worked there in and around not in Congress, but lobbying Congress on behalf of the public.
Wonderful. So what's your origin story? Tell us a little bit about the little you and how you grew up. Were you religious? Were you spiritual? Did that come later on? How did all of that come into affect you to be today?
Well, yeah, I grew up in a middle-class home. My father was a radical professor at San Diego State University. I grew up out on the picket lines with him, picketing the Vietnam War and picketing for the farm workers in front of Safeway, boycotting Safeways when they weren't unionizing the farm workers. And I was baptized Episcopalian, and my mom would always talk about getting us to church, but we never really did. In many ways, my strongest spiritual connection was through my grandmother, whose name was Sally Stevens Nichols. And she actually was the author of a book that has been somewhat influential and is still in print, called Jung and Tarot, An Archetypal Journey. And she studied with Carl Jung in Zurich in the 1950s, and then began to see the archetypes that Carl Jung talks about, the universal archetypes, in the tarot deck. And so then she wrote about that. And she also would sit with me and do the tarot and do the I Ching practice, the Chinese self-discovery. And she treated both of those as, well, now I would say, ways to know what you know. She never said, this is what this card means. She would say, what do you see in the card? What is there? And that gave me permission to look within for my truth. And then, I carried that with me. I became a person that people would talk to and ask for guidance, and I would always guide them within. And then eventually, fast forward many years, in Sacramento, when we had two small children and we were looking for a church, and I should say, I nearly entered the Episcopal Seminary in Washington, D.C. Oh. I was very involved with the Episcopal Church there and confirmed and really interested in becoming an Episcopal priest. Then I got pregnant with our first child, and it just didn't seem to be the right time. And then when we moved to Sacramento, we started looking for a church again, and we spent 5 years looking for one. And through a series of coincidences, I ended up walking into the Center for Spiritual Awareness in West Sacramento and just started crying on my first day. And I was not a crier. I'm still not really a crier, but I just was like, this is home. I just knew I was home, and I knew I'd be a minister in that tradition. And I am.
Wow, that's pretty interesting, because I have a similar experience. Oh. I'd had three children, and I was in San Diego County, and I was looking for something. And we went to the Episcopal Church one time, because that was close to what I grew up with, being English. Mm-hmm. But I just felt it wasn't a match, that, you know, the fear and the, you know, the things that stirred up when I was listening to the message. And then I found the, it wasn't CSL at the time, it was United. In Vista, California. And so, took my three little ones and went into the, and had the same, you know, oh my gosh, experience of, I get this. This speaks to my soul.
We didn't have to do the translating anymore, is really what I found, right? Didn't have to sit there and go, oh, Father, Son, Holy Ghost means.
Yeah, it was practical spirituality. It's I've always been seeking to understand what this life is all about. Yeah. And Science of Mind has really supported me on that path. So more about you.
I was just going to say, isn't it fun to watch the way people walk into a new thought or a Science of Mind church, and they could be an atheist, they could be someone who is recovering from an abusive Baptist childhood or whatever, and they just are home, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was an Al-Anon at the time. And so the two really sort of wove in together really, really nicely, really supported my journey of recovery. And
Nice.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people at the Center for Spiritual Awareness in West Sacramento who are also in recovery. And so that ends up playing a role.
Mm-hmm. So how did you ever pick up on some of the things your grandma shared with you as far as the tarot?
I'm no tarot expert the way she was. It's just one of many. I tend to be, as a minister, a person who finds a tool, loves that tool, uses that tool, keeps using that tool, but then it just goes in the toolbox, and then there's another tool and another tool and another tool. And so one of the reasons I'm writing the book about how to know what you know is to be able to unpack my toolbox for people and to go, this is one way in which I've known more about what I know. This is another way, you know, pull those tools out and teach them to people.
Did you ever have any sort of mystical experiences or expanded awareness experiences as you were growing up, as you were little? I mean, I haven't had many conversations with people that had a grandma that was, you know, into some things, woo-woo things, you might say, that would have been wonderful. I would have loved that
She was amazing. She was also really funny and really larger than life, and just a tremendous personality. I think my most mystical experience as a kid was I was in the YMCA. I would go to YMCA camps, and you know, YMCA has become just such a set of letters and a sort of secular reality in U.S. culture that we forget that at one point it stood for Young Men's Christian Association. So they do actually have this Christian ragger program that some percentage of people who went to YMCA is encountered, but most haven't, is what I found out. And in the RAGR program, you had a different bandana of a different color, and you learned spiritual things out sometimes, often in my case, out in the woods when you're camping or at a YMCA camp. And then you talked with one of the counselors about it, and then you grew. And I remember that combination of being in nature and connecting with spirit just being so powerful. And I mean, most of us have encountered, I think, a spiritual awareness in nature. Mm-hmm. And I'm lucky enough to have grown up with we have a family foothold in Yosemite National Park. So I have spent time in that cathedral of the giant rocks, the glacial, iconic glacial fixtures. And just that is where I've had some of the most powerful spiritual experiences of my whole life. Just the awe that this has been created and it exists, and that we can be with it.
Yeah, it's really phenomenal being outdoors. So, you know, here in Utah, many people are, they're either LDS or they're of the Church of Nature. And so there's a lot. We have a spiritual center, the Satya Center, and a lot of our people wouldn't be able to come on Sundays because of, worshiping outdoors, the great outdoors. I think it's such an amazing way to connect with that bigger feeling of mystery around who we are, what we are, and helps us kind of, expand our awareness out of our, conditioning of, you go to this brick and mortar building to worship God or worship spirit. And once you have that experience of connection, of being outdoors, of soaking in the beauty, it's really goes along with what we know, what we learn in science of mind and religious science and CSLs and New Thought. So I saw your website up there. Our producer popped it up there for a minute and distracted
me. Thank you, producer. So,
yeah, there you are, Sarah Stevens Nichols, author, speaker, leader, co-creating a new reality. So you're at tell us about the church you're serving at the moment.
Well, I serve at the Center for Spiritual Awareness in West Sacramento, which is led by Reverend Rick Harrell and was founded by Reverend Georgia Prescott. And it's a cutting edge, if we do say so ourselves, it's a cutting edge center, because it really walks its talk. It's extremely diverse, extremely lively. I'm not sure how many New Thought centers are as diverse. It feels like a Baptist revival a little bit on Sunday morning, because we're singing and stamping our feet and we're not speaking in tongues yet, but we're sometimes our practitioners when we pray, just get so caught up with the spirit that it's just astonishing. And I remember recently, a couple of months ago, we have this great praise and worship team, singing at the beginning, and they were singing, "Today will be the best day of your life. Today will be the best day of your life." And it just kept going and going and going. It probably was supposed to be a 3-minute song. And it went, I don't know, it may have gone 10 minutes, which I don't think normally would happen. But there was this weird little switch that happened where about 4 or 5 minutes in, my brain went, wait. And I think I talked with people that a lot of other people were like, what if it really was the best day of our lives? Like something happened where it just, we just became like in that affirmation, and the whole room was just like grooving on that. And it was just like everyone on their feet and this just like extraordinary energy. I mean, it is so fun to be there, you know.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, it's just a trip.
Yeah, I think that that whole, you know, getting into using your voice, singing, chanting, and then moving your body, I think that and saying something so powerful as this is the best day of my life, there's something to that, you know, that actually saying it, moving to it, repeating it, that does. Maybe the neuroscientists are onto something with, you know, this is how we're establishing new neural pathways.
Yes.
And to have music and movement that stirs up those emotions, that's powerful.
Yeah. And we have a new thought gospel choir. And yeah, and I've read and thought many times that the we can say an affirmation, but if we sing it, and rehearse it and like are singing it throughout our week because we're going to perform. I sing in our New Thought Gospel Choir. I'm just a rank and file soprano. You don't want to hear me solo, but it's just rewiring, just like you said, the neuro pathways. And there's also studies that show it improves your health considerably to sing, and singing for performance. Rehearsing improves it more, and performing improves it more. So if anybody watching this has a choir at their church or center or not a church, go sing in it. And even if you don't think you have a good voice, if they let you in, do it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I remember I've always, like you, I don't do solos, but I will sing in a choir if there is one that will have me. And it's such an interesting experience to be able to connect with people at that level, to have a joint intention message that you're somehow creating this art form, this something, this thing that's going to it's not only benefiting you by being involved with it, but when you perform it or when you share it on stage or wherever you do, it's such an amazing thing to be a part of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how many people are in your choir?
Oh, it varies. It's been between 20 and 30 lately. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
I don't know why it's not 100 people. I think it'll be 100 soon. Speaking of which, that makes me want to tell you this vision I have. Do you want to hear it?
Yes, I do. I do.
So, and then this kind of connects my like political and spiritual, where it comes together, is I think one of the things that it, especially this, well, the Centers for Spiritual Living and probably all the unaffiliated New Thought know how to pray in the way we do with spiritual mind treatment, right? Which is a very powerful way of praying. And any way to pray is great, but it's a particularly mind-blowing one. And I am into taking that out into the world and praying in contexts where nobody even knows you're praying, but doing a spiritual mind trip. So my favorite example of this is I will show up at public meetings like the County Board of Supervisors meeting or the City Council meeting. And recently I went to the Sacramento City Council where there was a resolution being voted on to declare Sacramento support for a ceasefire in Gaza. And there was a huge amount of controversy around that and a lot of energy around that and a lot of people being very angry at each other and angry at the city council and everyone sure that nobody was doing it right. So I showed up to do a spiritual mind treatment as my testimony, just come up to and do a spiritual mind treatment where I'm saying, just for anybody who's watching who doesn't know what it would be like, this is what I did, is to say, you know, good evening, members of the city council. I'm Sarah Nichols from, and I want to let you know that there is only God and there is only love. And love is showing up as each of you here. And love is showing up as every single person in this room. And love is showing up. And I just kept speaking of where love was and what love was doing. And love was creating a new possibility in the world now, a place where we could come together and be in peace and lay down our arms. And love may not be able to, you know, the government and various levels of government and in the world and the UN may not be able to figure out an end to the disputes in the Middle East, but love can. And Sacramento may have no jurisdiction over the ceasefire, but love does. And so that's what I showed up for. And I've done that in other contexts. And what I have found is, first of all, it's an amazing experience for me, but also it changes the room. People, something happens that wasn't otherwise going to happen. And people come up to me saying, that was so beautiful. They don't know it's a prayer. They just know it's the truth. And they can hear and feel the truth. And in that, on that evening, they actually voted for, overwhelmingly, the city council voted for that resolution. And it wasn't expected that that was going to happen. And it did. And I don't know how much it has to do with my prayer, because I actually didn't even get to say it on the record at that moment. I put it on the public record online, but it got so heated in there, they ended up shutting down the room before they got to me. But I've done that in other contexts where I have known it. And I would highly recommend anybody to show up and pray in public. I picture also entire groups of practitioners, whether they're licensed or not, just people showing up to know the truth in public and to say the truth, without having to have a picket sign or be angry, transforming the possibility into a world that works for everyone.
Beautiful. We're, keep that in front of mind, because we're going to pop off just for a minute or two for our break. See you on the other side.
Free my mind, open my heart with the whispers of truth, to live a conscious life, to live a conscious life on the growing edge.
And now, here's Ali.
And we're back with my guest, Sarah Stevens Nichols. And Sarah, you just asked us to, maybe it was a challenge, or maybe it was an invitation, but you asked us to show up and pray in a public forum. That seems like, woo, that's taboo, isn't it? But as I'm thinking about it, when you said you showed up at this meeting and you, in essence, shared a spiritual mind treatment, before you told me that, I was thinking, how could I show up and pray? And I thought I could do it at Starbucks, ask for a coffee, and then somehow go into those, you know, five steps of just affirming the truth of letting people know wherever we go that there is only one life and we're all a part of it. And I see you and we're connected. And the truth is, I love your coffee, or the truth is, yeah, your smile touches my heart. you know,
yeah, doing it at Starbucks works.
Yeah, if we could, wherever we go, I think there's an opportunity for us to be able to speak truth, to remind people of what we're not reminded of every day. You turn on the news, you go to the store, you know, work, whatever. We're not talking in these terms. We're talking typically about, you know, the weather, which is, you know, something fun to talk about, whatever, you know, whatever situation you're in. But we're mostly talking about what's not working well.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be sort of the norm these days. So you mentioned when you were sharing a little bit about you growing up, that you would go to these, that you would picket, or it sounds like you were an activist, and people in your family were somewhat of activists. Is that true?
Yeah, my father was an activist for sure. And I kind of got drafted into, I was the oldest and I would go along with him. And he was an activist till the day he died. And then I was lucky enough to essentially become a paid activist multiple times. I was almost straight out of law school. I ended up being hired by Public Citizen in Washington, D.C., an organization founded by Ralph Nader, if anybody remembers him. And I worked for their division called Congress Watch, where I was a consumer advocate, advocating for various consumer rights. But most excitedly for me, it was an opportunity to be an advocate for what we now call Medicare for All, Canadian-style single-payer healthcare in the U.S. during the time when the Clinton administration was pushing for a managed care-based version of coverage. And that was incredible. I mean, I had a blast being paid to go out and influence the public. We lost, in case you haven't noticed, we don't have Medicare for All. And I used to be megalomaniacal enough. I still have a little of that in me, or I probably wouldn't be a minister. But I used to be megalomaniacal enough to believe that if I had only worked a little harder in Washington, we would have Medicare for All. But I think it might be a slightly bigger issue than that.
Well, yeah.
I actually now believe that this is a little different from the trend within New Thought, is because I've spent a lifetime being an activist and being a paid advocate for a world that works for everyone, different aspects of that. And now I'm a minister. I'm not so much forgetting, it's fine that other people are, but I'm not so much forgetting the ministers and the congregants of New Thought out on the street being angry with other people. I'm more about believing the tools that we teach and the power that we teach, and taking that to the streets, like I was saying before, and taking that out to transform the parameters of the possible. And I still have a ton of friends who are paid advocates. My husband is a leading environmental advocate in the state of California and in the country, and has been for years. And a lot of my friends who are doing this, they're tired of their fighting the good fight and losing the good fight. They would like to win the good fight. They would like to actually see the change that they're advocating for. And so I think one of the missing pieces is bringing that spirituality back into the public realm, not church and state, but spirituality and the power of that.
Yeah. Well, when we were talking earlier, several months ago, before, you know, when we were considering you being on the show, and we had a lovely conversation, and you shared with me a video of you actually going to an event where Marianne Williamson was talking. Yeah. And you asked her a couple of questions, and that must have been interesting to see her, you know, as someone that's a huge, you know, iconic figure in A Course in Miracles and within New Thought. They're on the campaign trail and actually showing up, not mixing church and state in the traditional sense of it, but bringing a spiritual flavor to mainstream America. And so what do you, when you saw her doing her thing and you had an opportunity to have a conversation with her, did anything change for you as far as, you know, this being an advocate, wanting to create change and bringing spirit into the conversation as far as, you know, creating change and building a structure that's based on spirit but not religion?
Well, I love that she did that. I love that she ran for president and is and was listening to herself that deeply that she was able to take what she knows into the public. And she also has educated herself amazingly about the issues as well. So she's able to do both. It's unclear how much, I mean, literally unclear how much of a difference that may or may not have made in this time, since it seems pretty obvious at this point, although who knows what else is possible, that Joe Biden is going to be the nominee. He hasn't literally, you know, gone through the Democratic convention yet, but that seems like what's happening. But as we know, you know, what seems like it's going to happen isn't actually always what happens. So I have no idea what deal what that means. I mean, one of the more controversial things that I've said and talked about this year is that I actually think New Thought people need to pay attention to the rise of Donald Trump as a, that one of the things that people, one of the reasons that people are attracted to him is actually the way in which he uses the power of his word. Now, he is, you know, actively lying most of the time, but there's a weird way in which sometimes an affirmation is a lie until it's not, right? Like if we go out saying, I am prosperous and I am healthy when I'm actually feeling, you know, very sick and very poor, and eventually I am prosperous and I am healthy. And we've watched Donald Trump take his affirmations, his lies, and use them as affirmations to the point where some of them become reality, especially like him, the fact that he ever got elected president. You know, nobody with his kind of background, being a serial adulterer saying the things that he has said, you know, bragging about grabbing women by their genitals and all these kinds of things, has ever stayed in the public eye and become president. No one who's ever had multiple indictments has stayed even running for office. Even one indictment is enough to get anybody. So he's constantly doing what can't be done. And so those of us who are envisioning and working for a world that works for everyone need to realize that doing what can't be done is what needs to happen, right? And affirming that which we don't see in the world and making it so with the unlimited power that exists behind us is what is exciting to me, is that, like, if you really believe in this stuff, and it isn't the, I think in the old version of how we thought about this, if there was homelessness, we thought, somebody out on the street, it's their consciousness that got them on the street. But I think we now know, and maybe Ernest Holmes and so forth always knew, it's our consciousness that has people living on the street.
Exactly.
It's our consciousness. And so we need to change our consciousness. Now, I think Donald Trump is changing consciousness I don't believe he's changing it in a way that creates a world that works for everyone. I don't see any evidence of that, but I do take a certain inspiration from the idea that we can really let go of the fact of any rule we thought was there that was going to prevent, including that a new thought minister could become president, you know, or what, she's not a minister, but a new thought writer, a new thought, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I hear what you're saying, and it does line up, this idea of, you know, having a louder voice. And I think that the current, you know, environment or atmosphere that we're finding ourselves in is really giving us motivation and inspiration to have a louder voice, and to really see what we want as far as leadership in our country, that we, and I'm not a very politically involved person, but I definitely know when I do turn on, you know, watch a YouTube, and I do see what's going on in politics these days, it's giving me greater motivation and know who I want to be in power, or the kind of person with the kinds of intentions and the kinds of goals and dreams. And I think that seeing what we've seen over the last few years, it's just getting helping Americans to become clearer on what they really do want. And I think this current trend that I don't think is very positive or helpful is really the universe or life presenting us some clarity, giving us a snapshot, a wake-up call to say, all right, so what is it that you want? Get really clear. And that, as a practitioner, that's what we're always going for with our clients. When we're working with someone, right, we're doing spiritual counseling, we're saying, what is it that you really want?
Right.
And it's amazing how difficult it is for someone to really land on what it is they want. And if this,
instead of being clear on what they don't want,
right,
like you said before,
mm-hmm, right. And if this current environment isn't stoking that fire within our hearts to know what, so we can determine what it is that's most important to us, what really matters to us. So how you told us your story around how you came to CSL. I'm wondering how those two parts of you, this spiritual seeker, this spiritual activist, and this humanitarian, this person that wants to make the world better, how has that come together? Your being a lawyer and being a minister, how does that show up in your ministry?
Well, like I say, showing up at city council to pray. One of the things I'm in a little bit more position to do than others is to educate my colleagues who are leading centers about how much more they can do, how much more they can get involved in the world legally than they realize. You know, a lot of people in churches of any kind get, but especially our centers, for some reason, get scared of taking public positions and think that they're going to be running afoul of the tax laws, and that they're jeopardizing their nonprofit status. Well, that's not true at all. You can take a position for or against any public policy, including legislation, including ballot initiatives, if you live in a state that has statewide ballot initiatives or other state and local measures to vote on. You can take affirmative positions. You could spend money on those. You could talk about them till you're blue in the face. It's all completely legal. It's not considered political. It's not political. The only thing that's political is if you take a position for or against a particular politician who is, or political party who is running for office. And so it's not political. It's not even political, believe it or not, from the standpoint of the IRS, that I would talk about one particular politician and say things about them. That's not even political. We could put out a Centers for Spiritual Living election guide where it lists our values and gives an A to one candidate who has on how they are on our values and a F to another candidate on how they are on our values or a vision of the world that works for everyone. That's also completely legal as far as the IRS is concerned.
Wow. Scary to hear. I mean, as a pulpit minister, as the founder of a spiritual center here in Utah, I love what you're saying, but I'm also like, you know, it stirs up a little fear in me because you can't please everyone. I know that. But to take a stand can be quite disruptive within, a spiritual community that has a real mix of people.
Tell it to the mega churches, Ellie. They take stands and they grow and grow and grow.
Well, I hear it. I mean, I'm here in Utah with the LDS population so huge, and they definitely take a stand. That they are definitely instructed on, you know, how they're voting. Yeah. And I don't know. It still kind of stirs up this energy of, and I'm sure you bump into that as you talk to other ministers, as you share some of these ideas, which are.
Well, yeah. And all I'm saying is these are the parameters of the possible, even on the actual legal front, are much wider than you may think. And so then it's our spiritual work to do our work around our what we're afraid of and the stories we're telling ourselves about what will happen if we actually step into our truth. I mean, the Center for Spiritual Awareness in West Sacramento has, you know, 200 or 300 people on a Sunday, and it was only founded 20 years ago. It's not some 100-year-old church. And it's growing all the time, even post-pandemic. And it's very clear on what it stands for. So if you need an example of some, now that's Sacramento, but there's a lot of conservative people living in Sacramento. And, so anybody can do what they want to do wherever they are. And the only limitations are in consciousness.
Exactly. Well, I can't believe we're at the end of the show already. This conversation has been really interesting. And I always leave or ask a question at the end of the show. And it's this. We've all heard the song, "What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love." And I'm wondering, Sarah, what, from your standpoint, does the world need now?
Oh, gosh. First, definitely love, sweet love. Except that love is not about, love is powerful. So just remembering that the power of love can accomplish anything. That's what the Christ consciousness came to this earth to show us, is that the power of love can overcome. And as Martin Luther King said, darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that.
That's beautiful. Sarah, thank you so much for being my guest today. People can connect with you, read your blog. And it's really quite mind expanding and heart expanding. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, everyone. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for watching. And we really love you and appreciate you. Join us next Monday for John Harold Moore, who will be sharing his family constellations. So thank you. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, New Thought Media Network and the Satya Center. And most importantly, Sarah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Free my mind, open my heart with the whispers of truth. To live a conscious life, to live a conscious life on the growing edge. On the growing